back to the program. Top of the hour, Scott Laughlin, NHL Network Radio co-host, along with Gord Stellick of the Morning Skate on Sirius XM. Chris Cuthbert, play-by-play voice, NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. Toronto Maple Leafs facing off against the Minnesota Wild tomorrow. One of the games on Hockey Night we will discuss with CeCe. In the meantime, more on this Jeff Gorton press conference. So this is the first time that Gorton has spoken publicly in front of the Montreal media. Interesting press conference, like nothing exceptional or particularly newsworthy, other than right at the very end of the press conference where he mentioned, you know, timelines for the next general manager and coaches as well. As we bring on our producer, Maddie Marchese. Let's run through a few of these things and maybe put on a decoder ring and see what we think this might mean for the Montreal Canadiens. Speculation is fun, Maddie, on a Friday afternoon. Where would you like to start? By the way, what did you think of the presser, Marchese?
I did like the touch of Jeff Gorton attempting to speak French to the media. I thought that was good. But it also showed us that, God forbid, you can actually do a press conference in English in Montreal, and it's passable. It's fine. Mm-hmm. So PJ Stock pointed that out on Twitter, I would like to say. But there were some tidbits in there that you can kind of read between the lines, and we'll go over them in this block here. But I thought Jeff Gorton showed well. I expected
Maddie. I'm gonna interrupt you because Danielle is gonna get you to reconnect, because man, you got some static going on your connection right now. So we're gonna get Maddie Marchese to reconnect. Normally we do this with Elliot, but I guess this is an exclusive to the curator of 32 Thoughts. We'll get Maddie back on. We'll talk more about this Jeff Gorton press conference. You know, it is interesting that, you know, this is his third quote unquote original / arbitrary sixth team. Goes from the Boston Bruins to New York Rangers to the Montreal Canadiens. This is someone that's not shy about the big stage, even though the one thing we know about Jeff Gorton is he likes to work in the shadows very much. He's not really a front and center guy, although it was pretty impressive how he handled today's press conference. Didn't come across as someone that doesn't seek out the spotlight. Maddie, we have you back.
I'm here. I haven't touched any of my settings either. That's the best part about this.
Well, this is what we're going with. This is what we got. This is the show we've prepared. And as they said in The Godfather once upon a time, Maddie, this is the business we chose. All right.
This is the business we chose.
Yes. Finish your thought on the presser, then we'll get to some clips.
I just thought that Gorton did a great job, and I really do think that they have the right guy in charge. He was calm, cool, and collected, as I would have expected, but I thought he handled himself really well today, especially, you know, we know how the Montreal media can be, and we're going to hear some of it right now.
Yeah. Where do you want to start? Where do you want to begin?
Let's start with Eric Engels, our buddy from Sportsnet.ca, asked a question about what Jeff Gorton's vision is for this team.
When you spoke to Jeff Molson, he said there's a specific direction you need to go in. What is that direction? What's your vision?
Well, I'll say this. The team's obviously had a tough start to the season. You know, I recognize that. And Jeff and I, in our conversation, when we went through that. But, you know, I think it'll evolve over time. There's obviously things that have to happen here. I would say that if you look at some of the teams I've been around and been part of, we want to be fast and skilled. We need probably to work on our player development here. I'd like to add to analytics. There's a lot of different things I'd like to do. It's my second, third day here. So I'd ask you to give me a little time on that, how that plays out. But I think over time you'll see, my philosophy play out.
Sorry to break the rule right away here, but you've been speaking very briefly and have asked for patience both on learning French and you also went with the Rangers, asked for patience with the fans when you guys set off on a rebuild.
Yeah.
Is that a type of communication you feel perhaps needs to go out to this fan base, given what you saw last night at Bell Center with the jersey getting thrown?
Yeah. I mean, I think we want to be transparent as possible. But like I said, I want to come in here. Last night is the first time I've seen the team live. So, I mean, heading to Nashville today, like to see the team some more before we make those kind of decisions. But I look forward to, you know, spending more time with the players and the coaches and see where we're at. and then we'll go from there.
Okay, so a couple of things there of particular note. One, where he talked about player development, and the other about improving their analytics department and adding to the analytics department. That should come as no surprise, by the way, to anybody. Jeff Gorton is a very smart man who understands that something like analytics is information, and the more information you have available to you, and the more people that can turn that information into something that is practical, that you can see have having a net positive result on the ice, he's interested in it. So that's a good sign from Gorton, if you're a Montreal Canadiens fan. The other there is, you know, interesting about, you know, beefing up player development. And we've seen, again, it's going to sound like I'm, you know, just taking pot shots at Marc Bergevin here. It's not my intention. I'm just going to point out a couple of things here. There has been a history going back to 2012 when Marc Bergevin took over. The first pick was Alex Galchenyuk. There has been somewhat of a history of players getting drafted and then going nowhere, or players getting drafted and then getting rushed to the NHL. And a couple that come to mind right away, well, three specifically. One is the aforementioned Alex Galchenyuk. Now, not to do, again, a full audit on Galchenyuk and what happened there, but he was false started a few times. He's a center. No, he's a winger. No, we're committed to making him a center, but we're going to put Lars Eller on his side. And whenever it's time for an important draw where he can actually grow as a center, we're going to have Lars Eller take it. There was a feeling that this player was rushed to the NHL. There was also a feeling that, you know, you look at Jesperi Kotkaniemi, that he was rushed to the NHL. Remember the outcry when he was sent down to the American League? Oh, I can't believe first round pick. He should be in the NHL. There is nothing wrong with first round picks going to the NHL at all. And then most recently, Cole Caufield. And many pointed out, listen, what's the point of having Cole Caufield up if he's playing on your fourth line? This guy's got to be a top six guy getting top six looks and top six opportunities. Go to Laval, have the puck on your stick all game long, and then come up when ready. Those are just three of the development areas that I would point at as Jeff Gorton talks about needing to do more with player development. And so much of it is timing. How much time does the organization spend with the player at the American Hockey League level? Sending a kid back to junior instead of rushing him to the NHL because he's the shiny new toy we saw on stage at the draft. I get it, and it's the smart response. What's next, Maddie?
Jeff Gorton talking about what he's looking for in the next GM of the Montreal Canadiens.
Hmm.
I think, obviously, somebody that has a great knowledge of hockey, of understanding of how the business works. I think we'll look at everything. I think what we want to do as a group is we want to look at all the candidates and pick the very best based on, you know, what they have. Maybe they don't. Maybe it's a person that doesn't have a ton of experience as a general manager. But what else do they have that they can bring to the table? How else can they help us look at different scenarios? So we're going to look for somebody with maybe a little outside the box that can help us move forward and maybe complement me.
You know, I thought it was interesting there, Maddie, where the first thing out of his mouth when he's talking about qualifications or what he's looking for, the first thing he said was not necessarily someone that has a lot of experience as a general manager. Like you look in moments like this to try to, and again, we might just be reading in between the lines or have like what we think is a Jeff Gorton decoder ring on as we're listening to this thing and trying to figure out what he's trying to tell us. Is there a message in there from Jeff Gorton? If the first thing you say is maybe it's someone that doesn't have NHL experience as a general manager, is that a wink that the next general manager of the Montreal Canadiens is going to be someone that doesn't have general manager experience? Or is it just, we're going to have an open field of people that we talk to. We don't want to limit ourselves to someone that's been a general manager for 30 years. It could be someone that's been a manager at the minor league hockey level for 5 minutes, as long as they can complement what he wants to do with the organization. Someone who understands the business. You know, I was mentioning to Elliot last half hour that, you know, a lot of how he was talking about the next GM to me sounds like Daniel Briere. Sounds like Matthew Darche. Sounds like Roberto Luongo. I don't know that we should, and I know many certainly, and we saw this in the press conference, Juan Patrick Roy, and that was made apparent. But to me, what it looks like is lining up for here is we all believe that Daniel Briere is going to be given strong consideration. And after hearing that press conference, I still feel the exact same way. And hearing how Jeff Gorton talked about, you know, who the successful candidate will be. Interesting. Doesn't have to have NHL GM experience. Understands the business of the game, like maybe running a minor league operation and maybe having gone to Wharton School of Finance. Maybe played in the NHL for a number of teams, Buffalo, Philadelphia, and most importantly for this conversation, the Montreal Canadiens. Things to think about this weekend. He did mention as well, it's going to be after Christmas, probably when the next GM is named as they go through this process. What else we got, Maddie? Anything else from the presser?
Yeah, we got two quick ones here. So let's get to him talking about the aforementioned Patrick Roy.
This is good.
Talking about candidates, you already have one who made it officially that he's interested.
Yeah.
You must have heard about Patrick Roy.
I've heard of him, yes.
So what is your, first of all, what was your reaction when you heard about it? And what do you think of a guy who really wants the job. He really wanted, he feel that he can bring something to the table.
Right.
So what is your take on it?
Well, I mean, first, I have a tremendous amount of respect for him, for what he's done in hockey. So, and I know that he's always been an emotional guy and speaks his mind. So, listen, I think, like I said, I don't want to answer this every time, but I'm just getting here and getting a feel for the organization. And as we move forward and talking to Jeff and figuring out how we're going to go about picking that general manager, we're going to look at everybody that we think could be a fit. So I'm not going to rule anybody out. I'm not going to say yes or no to anybody. But certainly Patrick Roy, I heard that he made that statement. I know he's a passionate guy. I know a lot of people that know him well and I have, you know, obviously a lot of respect for somebody like that.
You knew the Patrick Roy question was coming. Hey, Maddie. Like,
oh yeah,
Patrick's been public about it. And listen, whether it's certain segments of the Montreal Canadiens media, the Quebec hockey media in general, whether it's a portion of that fan base that is just waiting for the return of Patrick Roy to Montreal after that infamous, you know, December 2nd game against the Detroit Red Wings, they've been waiting for Patrick to return to the Blue Blanc et Rouge, waiting for that glorious moment. So you knew the question was coming. And listen, Patrick would, you know, love to work. And, you know, to be honest, I don't even think he cares what the position is. You know, right now he's, you know, running a successful program in the Quebec League with the Quebec Ramparts. And I know they've fallen out of the top 10 of the CHL, but still a really good squad. Thank you very much. I don't think that he cares whether it's general manager, assistant general manager, coach. You know, he's I think he's thrown his hat in just about all of it. I think this is a situation where Patrick's looking at his career and saying, I don't know if it's my last time to try to get back in here with Montreal, but I think in Patrick's mind, he feels at peace very much with his career with the Montreal Canadiens, what happened previously with him and the Habs, and he's fine to park it and make a return. Does that happen under Jeff Gorton's watch or whomever the next general manager is, if it's not Patrick Roy? I don't know. But if you're someone that just cheers for the story, like there's a practical side here, and all of us right now, none of us have a hand on the wheel. And in media, we cheer for the best story. Give me the best story. That's what we want. You know, the not necessarily the right story always, but the best story is the obvious one, the return of Patrick Waugh. That would make things interesting. We all remember Patrick with the Avalanche. And what did he do in game one? It was Colorado versus Anaheim. I think we all remember Patrick Waugh shaking the glass at Bruce Boudreau of the Anaheim Ducks. His way of announcing that he was here and he was the coach. And this is what it's going to be like. You knew the Waugh question was coming. Does he end up in one of these power positions with the Montreal Canadiens? We shall see. We shall see. More on the Gorton presser, more on the Montreal Canadiens, and a tour around the NHL with Scott Laughlin from the NHL Network Radio Morning Show. And also bottom of the hour, Chris Cuthbert, play-by-play voice of Hockey Night in Canada and the NHL on Sportsnet. Hour two of the Merrick Show on the horizon. Welcome back to the program. Welcome to hour two of the show. Thanks so much for joining me this afternoon slash this morning. To our friends in Calgary and Vancouver. Chris Cuthbert coming up bottom of the hour from the NHL on Sportsnet. Hockey Night in Canada as well. Tomorrow, Chris calling the Leafs-Wild matchup. Two teams riding high, big win streaks. Snapping in goals at will. Should be a good one tomorrow on Hockey Night in Canada. Meanwhile, up the irons with Scott Laughlin, I'll call this segment, as I try always, Scotty, to slip in a Iron Maiden reference when you join me from NHL Network Radio, the Morning Skate, alongside Gord Stellick. How are you today, Scotty?
I'm doing well, Jeff. Do you remember the Who's final show at Maple Leaf Gardens back in 1982? Do you remember that last show that they ever did?
I remember because I think Pete Townsend was asked why he wanted to do his last show in Toronto. He said because you can get a good ale in Toronto. But yes, and I think they were simulcast on City TV and Chum FM as well.
It was, and I've got the DVD of that show, and every once in a while, Jeff, I'll throw it in. I get just as much of a joy out of seeing the out-of-town scoreboard, because you can see in the background, you know, just above the Reds, below the Blues, right? You can see the out-of-town scoreboards, and you can see the team logos, and they weren't lit up, because there were no games going on that night as far as the Who was concerned, but I always get a kick out of seeing those little details, those little intricacies of the building we used to love in Maple Leaf Gardens.
Oh, amen. And it's interesting the way that the crowd would pop whenever they would change, right? Like if it was like a Norris Division rival that were playing the Toronto Maple Leafs and all of a sudden like the Blackhawks were losing to, I don't know, pick your team, the Boston Bruins, there'd be like this cheer randomly in the second period as a team would pull ahead against the Norris or at times Adams Division rival back in those days, hey?
Well, and you'd wonder too, Jeff, right? You'd wonder, is that game over yet? And then all of a sudden up in the right-hand corner of the one box with that one team that won the game, you'd have that crystal clear light bulb that would light up. And when that crystal clear light bulb lit up, you knew the game went final. You're like, okay, I guess Minnesota hung on to beat St. Louis after all.
So, you know, okay, so here's what I've always, we're getting really deep into some minutiae of hockey here, but while we're at it, let's go even deeper here into deeper water. So here's what I've always wondered. I'm sure you have friends, as I do, and maybe you even have this yourself, Scotty, I don't know. We all know people that have chairs from the old Maple Leaf Gardens, just as we all know people that have chairs from the old Montreal Forum. That is a standard. I always, if there was one thing I could take from the old Maple Leaf Gardens was, you know, those old logos, those old, whether it was you know, Buffalo Sabres, Minnesota North, Cleveland, like that. That's the one thing that like, I'm sure someone must have at least one of these things. I can't believe that they've all been, you know, they found their way into the bin. I would love to know who has those, or maybe even just grab a couple, because when it comes to, like, I'm not much of a collector, but I would have loved to have grabbed a couple of those, Scotty.
I was so afraid, Jeff. I was so afraid you were going to say the troughs. I thought you were going to talk about the troughs that were in the Reds. And you're thinking, what did they ever do with the troughs? Well, maybe they just took them down the road to Buffalo. That's what the Bills have been using for years, right, as far as the football stadium goes. You know, I don't miss the troughs, quite frankly. That's a little bit too much information.
I was thinking about that because when you're a kid, like, you don't think anything of it. It's like, okay, well, that's where you just go and have a squirt. And I thought, like, how much contempt do you have to have for your fan base just to put out a trough?
Oh, boy. Yeah, just bring the cattle in, right? Bring the cattle in, get the cattle out, and let's drop the puck again.
The thing about that, one final thing here on the old Maple Leaf Gardens, that was always the only place, to my recollection, in Toronto where you could get two things. One, Frutella. And two, Fresca. Like, you couldn't find them in convenience stores, to my knowledge, anyhow. That was the only place. It used to be the biggest treat. We were going to go to see the my dad would take me to either Toro's or Marley's, you know, for the doubleheaders, or Maple Leafs, or wrestling, for that matter. And the biggest treat was, this is the only place you can get Fresca or Frutella.
Yeah, Frutella used to be big with me. Yeah, Frutella used to be big with me, Jeff. And every third Sunday, you know, I was a kid in the late 70s, early 80s, but after my MTHL game would come to an end at Ted Reeve Arena, I would get my dad to take me down to professional wrestling. Now, back in the days, this was before the WWF, as it was known then, kind of took off with Hulkamania, et cetera. This was the NWA, right? So this was Ric Flair in his prime. And who's this guy, Hulk Hogan, right? He was yet to be in Rocky III and yet to take off with the WWF. Andre the Giant would come through every once in a while. But I do remember the Frutella, specifically every third Sunday when the NWA card would take place.
Yeah, those are great. There was the association that that Tunney had with Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. Mm-hmm. So all three matches off the top of the card had to be from Crockett Promotions. Anyway, back to hockey. We went somehow from up the irons to Frutella, Fresca, the troughs, to Andre the Giant and Ted Reeve Arena. Welcome back to the program. We're 6 minutes into hour two. Scotty, what did you make of the Jeff Gorton presser today? Like, what were some of the more salient points that you took away from it?
Well, I mean, I think more or less, Jeff, just what he said, they're going to start to think outside the box and filling the general manager's position. And, you know, I jumped off Twitter for about an hour or so, and when I came back, all of a sudden I saw Pat Brisson's name was trending. I'm like, what's this with Pat Brisson? And I go, okay, people are putting two and two together here, and they're listening back to what Jeff had to say, and they're thinking, why not Pat Brisson? There's a guy who knows the market. There's a guy who's bilingual. There's a guy who knows how to deal with people and who's a great communicator. Why not Pat Brisson? Now, look, I mean, they got a special thing going on, right? They've had a special thing going on for decades where he works and heading up that agency. So for him to step away, I think it would take something monumental. Is working for the most famous franchise in hockey history monumental enough? It might be. It's real interesting to think about that. I know people have talked about J.P. Barry, and, you know, I guess you'd have to throw Alan Walsh in there. I think Alan, if I'm not mistaken, is actually from Montreal originally also. So who knows? I mean, if you're going to think outside the box could mean a player agent. And I hadn't really factored that into the equation, right? We're thinking about the former players and, you know, the guys who work in front offices like Martin Madden Jr., et cetera. Boy, oh, boy, I hadn't thinking that far outside the box. And if you're going to go that way, why not Pat Brisson? That makes something certainly worth a whole lot to talk about.
You know, his name was tied in at various times with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Obviously, one of his key clients is Sidney Crosby. Pat would have, I believe, played hockey with Troy Crosby growing up in Montreal. So there's always been that family association. They at least known each other. But his name had always been attached to Pittsburgh. To be honest with you, like, I look at... you know, I look at a situation with Pat Brisson, I say, can he take the pay cut? Because he does very well.
Sure.
thank you very much. And that agency is hot, and they have some big names. And not that, you know, I mean, listen, he just most recently, you know, helped get, you know, Jack Eichel traded. He's someone that certainly knows hockey, knows the players, knows the landscape, knows organizations, knows everybody. And can communicate. Would he be up for a GM challenge? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but it wouldn't be the first time that we've seen an agent take over a team, though, Scotty.
No, and I think, too, that, you know, as I mentioned about being a communicator, too, Jeff, I mean, that would bode well for that role. Like, you'd better be able to get along with people, have good relationships with people, working relationships, and you'd have to have a good one with Jeff Gorton. And, you know, I'm not sure how much they've had to do with each other over the years when Jeff was with Boston and then with the New York Rangers, of course, how many contracts they would have done or that sort of thing. I'm sure they would know each other fairly well. But that's the whole thing. It's just communicating and getting along and working well with people. I think that's got to be a prerequisite for that job, amongst being relatively inexperienced as far as the GM position goes, and as far as being bilingual as well. I think that obviously factors into the whole equation as to what they're going to eventually select and whom they're going to select. And, you know, we found out earlier today that right around maybe after Christmas, he's hoping to have somebody in place. So I'm guessing that search is going to be ongoing as we speak.
Yeah, the two noteworthy things as far as making news goes, one, Dom Ducharme gets the rest of the season, and two, that, the GM search won't conclude before Christmas. I mean, I don't think Gorton wanted to marry himself to that timeline. I thought it was quite funny that he didn't know what month it was. Oh, we're in December? Okay, yeah, maybe after Christmas. And I can understand that. Listen, he's also a hockey dad. He spent a lot of time out in Chilliwack with his kid there playing in the BC Junior League. But the name that I keep coming back here to, you know, when he talked about doesn't necessarily – the first thing that Gorton said was when he talked about who this person is going to be, he referenced that they didn't need to have experience as a GM. To which I look at and say, okay, so he's already predisposed. Like, that's the first, that's top of his mind. So one of two things. He's already predisposed to someone who hasn't been a GM in the NHL, or that's his way of just saying we're keeping the field wide open. The name I keep coming back to is Daniel Briere. That's the one. And for the longest time, you know, whether it's his work in the ECHL with ECHL Maine, whether the fact that, you know, a longtime player in the NHL, obviously can communicate in French very well, knows the game, close to the players, went to Wharton School of Finance, University of Pennsylvania, like a real smart guy. And as you know, Scotty, we've talked about it on your show before, like he's been considered, you know, one of the up-and-comers in this game. Like there's always, okay, who are the next ones? Who's that next wave of manager going to be? And Briere is always in that conversation. There have been times where people have wondered about Briere for positions before, and even in his own words, he said, I'm not ready for this yet. I still need to learn. He was interviewed by the Arizona Coyotes for the assistant GM position. That ultimately went to John Ferguson. They leaned more towards someone that had more experience. But that's the name that I keep coming back to here, Scott. Daniel Briere. What do you think of that one?
Well, he's a well-respected and well-liked guy, right? You'd be hard-pressed to find people around the hockey world that have anything bad to say about Daniel Briere, first as a player and now, as you say, Jeff, with what he's done the last couple of years to build that resume up. And, yeah, you want to talk about jumping right into the deep end. I mean, if you jump in Montreal, that's, again, almost trial by fire. But you do have Jeff Gorton, who I think essentially people know the buck is going to stop with. So I think he'll be under consideration, strong consideration. Another guy I thought of, too, and I know that you and Elliot have talked about this as well, and Friedge dropped this on our program when he joined us yesterday, was Martin Madden, just because he's got an acumen for scouting, and he's a good recognizable talent-type guy. And I said, you know what, if anything, I mean, you can argue with what Mark Bergevin did or didn't do and some of the good moves he's made and some of those that kind of, you know, blew up on him and such. But, you know, he has stockpiled, you know, the organization. Not only do they have talent at the NHL level, but they've got some players in Laval. They've got a whole bunch of draft picks that they're going to take into July because it was supposed to be for last year in Montreal where they're going to make this big splash. Now, as it turns out, they're going to have to wait till next July. And I just wondered whether or not you put a guy in there that's got a resume, that's looking for an opportunity, but also maybe has an eye for talent. Because we know Trevor Timmons is no longer there as well. And we felt like, you know what, if you can check off more than one or two boxes, why not check off three or four? And maybe Martin Madden Jr. would be that type of guy. Now, as Friedge said to us yesterday, and I'm sure he's talked to you about it as well, Jeff, the word on Madden, though, is he's more or less reclusive. Like, he doesn't want to be in the spotlight. Now, if there's one thing we know about what this role is going to entail, it's going to entail a whole lot of talking with the media in French and in English. And if you're a reclusive personality, well, that might not be the job for you.
Yeah, and he's like, I don't know how the Game of Thrones is going to shake out in Anaheim. Like, I don't, like, at the end of right now, Jeff Solomon's there with as the interim general manager. How that is going to shake out, I don't know. But I would imagine that Madden would be one of the people clearly under consideration for the big chair. You know, one of the interesting things that Gorton talked about was, you know, and I don't know whether this was a reference to players like Galchenyuk and Kotkaniemi and maybe most recently Cole Caulfield. He said they need to do a better job of developing players. One thing to draft them, another thing to develop them. We've seen players rushed and miscast. We can certainly say that, you know, Alexander Galchenyuk, that happened to him. You can make the argument the same thing happened to Jesperi Kotkaniemi. It's still very early in Cole Caulfield's career. We'll see how they handle him for the remainder of the season. But I thought that that was a really interesting one, that we need to do a better job developing. To me, that sounded like we need to do a better job here making sure that players season enough in the American League before they make it to the big squad. What did you make of Gorton talking about needing to do a better job of player development?
Yeah, I think that that's probably on the mark. I always think, you know, everybody talks about, well, have your prospects in the American Hockey League, allow them to be overripened when they get to the NHL, the Detroit model, right? Now, Detroit always reaped the benefits of having a really good, usually Stanley Cup contending team in the NHL, so you weren't necessarily rushed to get guys who were selected, you know, in the high rounds or the low rounds, for that matter, into the NHL. So you could afford to take your time with it all. Montreal hasn't really bottomed out. Montreal appears to be bottoming out right now. And when you're bottoming out and you're not that good, there certainly is a lot more pressure on you to get guys into the NHL a little bit sooner. So that's where the patience comes in. And Jeff Gorton, I think, was patient in New York. I thought that that thing came around on the surface a lot quicker than anybody could have expected. And that's why I'm glad to see that Jeff Gorton has this opportunity, because I really did think, Jeff, he got the raw end of the stick with
yes.
James Dolan in New York. And
100%.
I still don't completely understand why he and JD were shown the door when they were. But again, they had a guy in waiting in Chris Drury that, you know, they felt they could give the job to. And we've seen the Rangers get off to a great start this season with a lot of the pieces that Jeff Gorton really put in place beforehand, too. So I think it's legit. I think a lot of times when you talk about seasoning and having your prospects be ready and developing them and taking your time with them, it really is on par with just exactly where the NHL team is at. If the team is above water and looks like they're competitive in the NHL, you can afford to take your time in places like Laval. I think with what we're seeing now, we're seeing the Habs kind of bottom out a little bit. And when you bottom out just a little bit, you're more or less pressed to rush guys in a little bit quicker. So we'll see. I think patience will be a virtue here. This is not going to be something that happens overnight. We know they've got a couple of big-ticket contracts on the books right now that they're going to have to address here and going forward. And then you kind of put the pieces all back together again. I really believe, Jeff, that in today's professional sports landscape, five-year plans, they went out the window a long time ago, right? It
100%.
Does not take
totally.
5 years
totally.
To get things yes. turned around. A GM might tell you that, but that's just not the way it works in pro sports these days. Within 2 or 3 years, like the New York Rangers did with Jeff Gorton at the helm, you can start to put the pieces in place with a couple of good drafts, with a couple of key free agent signings, and all of a sudden you're a playoff team again. It's not going to happen overnight, but it's not going to take forever either.
Just as an aside, first of all, I can't tell you how refreshing it is to hear you reference the Detroit Red Wings and the idea of over-ripening players. This has been something, everybody has just parroted it back because someone said it once and it sounded good, so everyone just says it. The idea that they deliberately left players in the American League to quote-unquote over-ripen them is, I think, a phony story. They just didn't have spots on the team. Like, I'm sorry, Yuri Hudler and Valtteri Filppula, you're going to stay extra in the American League, not because we want to over-ripen you, but you can't crack the lineup.
Yeah.
There's like a dozen Hall of Famers here. Like, I'm sorry. And then somehow
Absolutely.
Grand Rapids turned into this place where everybody's over-ripened. No, the NHL team was too good, and no one could crack the lineup. And somehow we've turned this into this, this was a brilliant plan by the general manager. You know? No, it's not. No one
Absolutely.
Can make the team.
Yeah, you could let them incubate because you were winning games in the NHL. You were in the playoffs every year. You were taking a run at a Stanley Cup here or there.
Yes.
So you could afford to have guys play for Grand Rapids. The other one I love too, Jeff, is when people come out and say, well, you know what? We've got this highly touted prospect, and we cannot, under any circumstance, subject this kid to a losing environment. We don't want him to be a part of a losing culture. Yeah. I've always wondered about that, because if you're a team, and we've seen teams, i.e. the Buffalo Sabres, that have been consistently bad year after year after year and don't even get near the playoffs. So if you're going off the premise, well, we got to have this guy down in Rochester, he's going to be playing for the Amherst for a couple of seasons here, we don't want him around this losing environment, that's not the way we want to bring this prospect up and have his progression take place. You might have a guy making his NHL debut, Jeff, but at the age of 28.
How come?
He might be hidden in Rochester forever because the Sabres are never really any good, as it seems. So I think, to a certain extent, you don't want to throw somebody into a losing situation. But unfortunately for some franchises, they've got no choice. They have to have a guy learn in the NHL to make mistakes, how to deal with them, and work through all that adversity that you're going to become a good player on a good team.
Remember how bad Washington was when they got Ovechkin? Yeah. Was there any talk about not rushing him into the NHL because we don't want to subject him to this, this Washington Capitals team where it was like 5 minutes ago that Jagr wouldn't even do line rushes and warm up with the guys with a bad environment we can't subject him? No, of course not.
Yeah, you can only protect them for so long, I think. Before long, you have to expose them to the NHL. If your team's losing, unfortunately, they're going to have to learn how to swim as well without the life preserver when the team's struggling.
What do you make of the Calgary Flames right now? Another win last night, another goal from Mangiapane, another goal from Lucic. Like, all of a sudden, Milan Lucic
five-hole.
Is like... So you want to hear a great five-hole story? So Kelly Rudy told me this story years ago when I was working Hockey Night Radio. Because he would always stay after practice, and Mike Bossy would always stay after practice, mm-hmm. but he'd be shooting the pucks right at the middle of the net. And you'd think, like, you know, snipers would be like, you know, bar down or hugging the post or, you know, like really like tight shots, like really hard to hit places. And Bossy would be firing them right at the middle of the net. And Kelly said, he asked him, he said, "Why are you doing that?" He goes, "I want to shoot the puck. I want the puck to feel like it's gone through the goaltender because I want to beat him psychologically. Like, if a puck goes over your blocker or over your glove, it gets a perfect shot. The goalie can say, well, I can't stop that. That's a perfect shot. But if the goal goes through the five hole and scores psychologically, it messes with their mind because I've put the puck through them. That's what I want to do to goaltenders. I want to like destroy their confidence and put the puck through them." I am a huge proponent of the psychology of the five-hole goal being something that defeats netminders more than just, wow, he picked the perfect corner between where the glove stops and the helmet begins. No goalie can stop that. It gives the goalies an excuse for not making the save. I like the Bossy idea. Make it feel like it's going through the goalie. Go five-hole all day long.
Yeah, interestingly, Jeff, I think when I remember back to it, remember when Bossy scored 50 and 50? I think his 50th. Came five-hole against the Quebec Nordiques. So I think that's how he scored his 50 and 50 goal. And with time running out, he scored. And I think it was John Graham, if I'm not mistaken, who was the goalie back then. So you're right. I mean, put the puck on the net. Have the opportunity to put it through him in some way, shape, or form. Look, I used to work with Espo, of course, and we did the show together for years. And that's one thing Phil said, too, because, you know, Phil's all about shooting pucks, right? Like, he would get off the bus shooting pucks to work the net.
Volume.
Yeah, he said a lot of the time he would just fire them at the goalie. Like, he just wanted to hit the target. He wasn't a guy that was going to stand there, despite the fact he could score 76 goals in a season. He wasn't the type of guy that was going to stand there in the slot and start trying to pick corners and, you know, to try to pick and choose where you're going to put the puck. No, just hit the net, put it on goal. Chances are it's got a chance to go in. It can't go in if you don't hit the target. And he had success with that, too. So it's amazing how simple it seems like for the great goal scorers in hockey history to describe the way that they did it. Milan Lucic, not a great goal scorer in NHL history. But boy, oh boy, Jeff, I mean, to your point, he's having a great deal of success. Every goal he scores seems to go five-hole.
It's awesome.
And I'm guessing that the goalies that are facing Milan Lucic perhaps have eased up on the film work and figure we don't have to figure out where Lucic is going to go because he doesn't score goals anyway. If you watch the film, if you watch your hockey highlights, you know, on Sports Central or wherever, you would see him scoring an awful lot right between the pads, a lot of times right along the ice, too. So do your homework, goaltenders.
You know, I'm curious about those times with Espo. How many times did he tell you about needing a crane to back check all those years?
He got tired. He got tired out after those two-minute shifts, Jeff. I mean, he was needing a breath after those two-minute shifts.
I think today's the anniversary of Ray Bourque. I think I just saw this online on Mike Comito's Twitter feed. Isn't it today the anniversary of their jersey retirement and one of the great moves in the history of the game, Ray Bourque taking his number 7 jersey off and revealing 77 in one of those like Boston Bruins tearjerker moments at the old Garden?
Yeah, Espo told me that that was one of the few times in his life that he was speechless. You could see in watching that night, and I believe I watched it live. You may have as well, but I remember Espo just kind of welling up a little bit. It was a very emotional moment for him to see Raymond Bourque wearing number 7, and all of a sudden the sweater comes off and he's wearing 77, and never shall that number 7 be worn again for the Boston Bruins.
Islanders are in a tough way right now. They can't seem to win at home. I remember Harry Neal once said about the Vancouver Canucks when he was coaching them, we couldn't win on the road, we couldn't win at home. My failure as a coach was I couldn't figure out somewhere else to play.
I'm guessing
the Barry Trotz might feel like Harry Neal right now. What's happening to the Islanders, Scotty?
Well, and tomorrow night, Jeff, they're into Detroit, where, coincidentally, the Red Wings have won 6 of their past 7 at Little Caesars. So it's not going to get easier, whereas in previous seasons it might have with a visit to Motown. It won't get easier tomorrow night. Look, they just got a bunch of guys back last night out of sick bay, guys missing COVID, and that sort of thing really running roughshod through that team. So I got a feeling it's going to take a while for this thing to get turned around. Look, they've got games in hand on pretty much everybody that they're chasing, which is everybody in the division, as we know, including struggling Philadelphia, who's up against it Sunday against Tampa and again the next night against the Colorado Avalanche. So maybe some inroads to be made by the Islanders. They just have to get guys healthy, and they have to get guys back out of sick bay with COVID and such. Once they get all hands on deck, and it still might take some time after that too, right? Because whenever somebody has tested positive for COVID, we've heard these different types of stories. Some like Nathan MacKinnon have said, I've tested positive, but I got double vaxxed, and so I'm not feeling that badly, so I guess the vaccine's working. Others have said, you know what, I recovered from it, but boy, it was hell, and it took me a while to get back, and even when I did get back, it was a bit of a work in progress. So this team's up against it. I think the star of the show for them this season has been Ilya Sorokin, their goaltender. He's been their best player throughout. But he hasn't had much in the way of run support. Their power play has been ineffective once again. Losing Pulock a couple of weeks ago certainly hurt that cause as well with his big shot from the point. Matthew Barzal, still their best offensive player, but for a while he's playing without the likes of Anders Lee and Josh Bailey and others. So it has been a disastrous season for them, other than the fact that their new building's open and they know where they're going to be playing for the next 10, 15, 20, 30, 35 years. Other than that, Jeff, there's not been a lot to get excited about for the New York Islanders. And like I said, this might get worse, believe it or not, before it gets better.
You know, it's really tough when you lose key defensemen in your top four. And I know that, you know, Nashville's a freak because, you know, how many defensemen have they spelled off? And they're still, you know, they were still competitive and still have elite-level blue liners. But a few of the Islanders, and you look at the last couple of seasons, you know, Letty's gone. Devon Taves, because of cap consideration, he's now with the Colorado Avalanche. Johnny Boychuk retiring. They've lost a lot off that back end. Like, it would be tough for any team to be able to survive that. Like I said, we all love Pulock and Pulock. Like, that's a wonderful combination. You know, just stay healthy. But I don't know many teams that can lose defensemen like Letty, like Taves, lose them the way that they did and still come back the exact same team, regardless of whether you have Zdeno Chara or not.
Well, very good points, Jeff. And look, we saw Robin Salo step in recently, too. And look, they've had some high expectations for this guy. He's like 23, and he's had a little bit of seasoning over in Europe and now in Bridgeport, and he's had his opportunity. And, you know, at times it looks to be too much for him, too. So you're having to maybe give guys opportunities that you normally wouldn't give opportunities to. And I think that stretched you a little bit. But you're right, the guys that they've lost, especially Nick Letty, too. Look at the difference that Letty's made for Detroit, right? In insulating guys like Philip Hronek, and insulating certainly Mo Sider, who's going to be in the Calder Trophy conversation all season long. So, you know, Detroit's gain has been the Islanders' loss, and you're right, they've lost a lot. Their goaltending still has been good. Varlamov's still looking to find his way after being hurt like he was, but Sorokin has come in as advertised, and, you know, we've often looked at Sorokin versus Shesterkin and how that's going to be a great New York battle for pretty much the next 8 to 10 years or so. Well, not necessarily so in 21-22, just because of where the Islanders find themselves.
Absolutely. You mentioned the Red Wings a second ago, and I'll end the conversation on this one. You're voting for the Calder right now. Is it Raymond? Is it Sider? Is it someone like Dawson Mercer? Who's your Calder right now? Essentially, I'm asking you, which Red Wing wins the Calder right now? And maybe you throw Nedeljkovic in there. I don't know.
Yeah. No, Nedeljkovic has given them all that they would have wanted. And Look, I said on Monday, because we sort of did our quarter poll predictions, I said on Monday Lucas Raymond's the guy. I think he's separated himself enough from everybody that's in pursuit. Now, that's not to say, of course, that we don't see Cole Caulfield the second half of the season go on a bit of a tear. He's got that type of talent. But I think that the lead that Raymond's built up in the eyes of all the voters will serve him well. And, you know, we often talk about the rookie wall, right? And, you know, how, you know, when you're playing 82 NHL games and you're traveling from city to city and you're playing, you know, four games in six nights if you have to and that sort of thing, and how difficult that is in a young player. That's going to be have to, I think, something that Lucas Raymond and Mo Sider and all the rest are going to have to take into account, and they're going to have to deal with that and roll with it. But for the most part, I think the cream rises to the top. And, you know, we had questions about, you know, Lucas Raymond coming into this season, Jeff. We thought that Sider would be there coming off the Swedish Hockey League Defenseman of the Year award he got last year. Yeah. We knew he'd be here all along. They kind of weren't sure about Raymond. We'll give him a look and we'll see how it goes. I think he had a hat trick earlier this season in one game, and from that point forward, you figured this kid is not only here to stay, but this kid's probably going to be making a speech at the end of the year for the Calder Trophy.
This is great. Scotty, always a delight. Thanks for the trip down memory lane as it relates to Maple Leaf Gardens and wrestling and Frutella and the out-of-town scoreboard. You have yourself a great weekend. We'll catch up real soon.
All right. Look forward to it. Thanks, Jeff.
There he is, great Scott Lachlan from NHL Morning Skate. That is the morning show on SiriusXM's NHL Network Radio property. Okay, Hockey Night in Canada matchups tomorrow. Toronto Maple Leafs facing off against the Minnesota Wild. Montreal takes on Nashville. Colorado, Ottawa, and the Pittsburgh Penguins travel to Vancouver to face off against the Canucks. Chris Cuthbert handling the Toronto-Minnesota affairs. We'll get to CeCe here in a couple of moments as the Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Thanks for joining me. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday. Thanks so much for joining me today. I want to thank Scott Lachlan for stopping by. In the first hour, we played a lot of the clips from the Jeff Gorton press conference, Executive VP of Hockey Operations, and right now still general manager, essentially, of the Montreal Canadiens until they find a full-time replacement for Marc Bergevin. And thanks to Elliot Friedman for stopping by as well. We're standing by for Chris Cuthbert from the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. Tomorrow on Hockey Night, Vancouver and Pittsburgh. Man, Pittsburgh's in a tough way right now. Pittsburgh's getting close to that decision time. Who are we? Which direction are we going to go in? How long can we keep the cupboards bare here with this franchise? And what does new ownership feel, or how does new ownership feel about any proposed new direction for the Penguins? The Avalanche face off against the Ottawa Senators. Ottawa gritting one out yesterday against a really good Carolina Hurricanes team. Anton Forsberg, the story there. Montreal faces off against Nashville, and handling the affairs for the Toronto-Minnesota matchup. Two teams at the height of their powers right now is Chris Cuthbert. Thanks, as always, for stopping by, CeCe. Before we get into the Maple Leafs and the Minnesota Wild and the NHL, do you have a thought on Brian Williams, the former colleague with CBC? I'll never think of a triple time check the same way as I will when I think of Brian Williams' voice. Wrapping up a 50-year career yesterday, do you have a thought on Brian Williams and his career?
Well, I've got a million thoughts. Just to, as I tweeted yesterday, Brian made every show he did just that much bigger. I mean, he had that kind of presence. He had the ability to, I think, focus in and zero in on what would trigger the fans' interest the most. And just the breadth of the career, I'm thinking from F1 with Jackie Stewart and, you know, IndyCar racing with Bobby Unser to all the great ski hills of the world with Ken Reed and of course the Olympic coverage. I mentioned 1976. For a lot of people, they wouldn't remember that, but it was the Olympic Games in Montreal, and the focus of the nation was on on that, perhaps as much as, you know, Vancouver in 2010. But Brian did weightlifting, and weightlifting at any other time would have been a minor gig, and he just turned it into something that you had to watch, and it was no surprise that 4 years later he was the guy hosting the Olympics. But I do have one funny story, if I can go a little longer. But Brian was also a trendsetter. He was the first guy, I think, Hockey Night in Canada, CBC, who didn't wear the standard uniform.
Powder blue?
You know, we all had our jackets, and there was a push in the early 90s to get us to just be able to wear our own clothes, and at the time, and maybe they were right about this, but they didn't trust how we dress ourselves. But one day Brian showed up, and he was wearing his own stuff, and there was a meeting shortly thereafter, and everybody else said, "Hey, Brian gets to wear his own stuff." And Brian's excuse was that he could not wear the issued tie because it was broken. So that was always we had fun with that. That a broken tie led to a new wardrobe regulation for everybody at CBC.
I always loved that look, though. I know it's nostalgia, and I know it's like, you know, the looking through the lens of, you know, young 12-year-old Jeff Merrick, but it always seemed like, and I understand, like, the thinking behind it was make everybody on the show look like they were part of their own team. You know, we're watching the Leafs and the Habs, or the Canucks and the Oilers, or whatever it was, but the guys and girls on the air, they were on their own team as well. I really liked it. I know it's different now, and of course things evolve, but what did you make of it, even looking back at a, you know, 2021 lens?
Well, my whole goal in my career was to wear the powder blue, so I get you. That was to be part of that team. I'm fascinated by the fact, I think CBS still wears, Jim Nantz, you'll see, wearing the CBS crest, so it has lingered. I wasn't as crazy about going out in public in the orange or whatever color that was, CBC jacket. It was less a standout when we wore the blue with the red tie, and the red maple leaf on the lapel. But, times change, and I'm sure there are viewers that are looking at us on the air and saying, man, they probably look better in those standardized jackets.
Even with the old exploding pizza logo as well.
Yes.
As dated as that may be. Well, the times do change, and right now we're setting up Minnesota and Toronto, and we're focusing on, listen, a couple of the youngest, brightest stars in the NHL universe, and that is Kirill Kaprizov for the Minnesota Wild, who, you know, it's not as if he's a teenager, a little bit older rookie of the year, but nonetheless, and Austin Matthews. As you head into this game tomorrow, Chris, what are sort of the stories within the game that you're most interested in?
Well, I mean, bigger picture is from November 1st on, these are the best two teams in the league. And it's our first look at Kaprizov. I'm pretty excited. I used to get a lot of Minnesota games with NBC and kind of watch Kevin Fiala burst into a real upper echelon offensive guy. He's off to a slow start this year, and things aren't going in, but Fiala's an exciting player to watch, but Kaprizov's on another level, and I've only seen him at the Olympics in 2018 when he scored the golden goal for OAR, I think is how we termed it there. But anyway, I'm really excited to see him, and I found it interesting that when you look at his season, there's some similarities to that of Austin Matthews. Slow start, and now just on fire. So I think he had 6 assists, and that's it till October 30th, and then he got warmer in the next couple of weeks of November. But since then, he's absolutely been on fire. So it'll be fun to see him and see how the Leafs handle him for the first time.
17 points in his last 8 games for Kirill Kaprizov. He and 3 points last night as they beat New Jersey 5-2. He's he's that next level guy right now for the Minnesota Wild. A lot is made about the Toronto Maple Leafs right now, and some are jumping back on. Others are still cautious, having been burned too many times in the first round. Tell me what happens in late April and early May, and I'll get back to you on the Toronto Maple Leafs. How do you feel about this team right now, and has all the playoff disappointments sort of ruined the regular season for a lot of Leafs fans?
Well, you know, it is a catch-22 when they were terrible in early October and everybody was dumping on them. They were the same people saying no matter what they did in the regular season, it wouldn't matter. And now they're playing like the best team in the league, and I get it. It doesn't matter quite yet as much as it will later on. But I certainly think we're seeing all the signs. When you're the second best defensive team in the league, I think there's a lot of cred that goes with that when you're headed to the playoffs. And I still think they're just scratching the surface offensively. I think there's more there. Marner gives you a couple of highlight assists the other night, and he's been doing that kind of regularly, but yet the numbers aren't quite Marner-esque yet. I think there's more there from the top end guys, and there they all are in the top 25 of scoring. So I'm pretty impressed. I thought the Colorado was a step back game potentially, and it wasn't. And now I think maybe the Leafs aren't thinking this way, but a split of two tough games in Minnesota and Winnipeg would sit pretty well right now. But I looked at Colorado prior to that with Minnesota and then Winnipeg on the horizon and thought, well, this might be where they come back down to earth, and so far so good.
You know, here I go, you know, they're the best team in the NHL, in the last few weeks, and here I go nitpicking them. But you look at the blue line. Is there any concern if you're the Maple Leafs that – you know, you have a look at the production right now, and there's three goals from Morgan Rielly, one from Jake Muzzin, and one from Travis Dermott, and everybody else has a bagel beside their names. Does that concern you at all if you're a member of the Maple Leafs?
Well, if I wasn't scoring, it would concern me, and it does to a certain extent. I mean, I was kind of wowed last night figuring out that Minnesota's blue line is as potent right now, yes, point-wise, as Colorado, and I sort of thought the Avalanche were kind of out there on their own. I mean, to think Colorado's had 20 goals from their blue line coming into the game against Toronto, that is pretty phenomenal. But it's not like the Leafs aren't producing even with that. I mean, they're playing good defensively, and now they've moved up, I think, last time I checked, they're 13th in offense. This should be a top 10 offensive team. And you could argue, I guess, maybe they're not right now because they're not getting enough from their blue line. But I'm pretty happy with, if I'm a Leaf fan, at being number two defensively. And I think that's how we'll measure the Leaf blue line first. And and if they can produce points, that'll be gravy.
You know, on Wednesday, Elliot Friedman was making the point that just through performance, you know, John Tavares has to be considered as part of the conversation for the Olympic team should they end up playing in Beijing, which is a caveat we do have to add. You know, whether it's Steven Stamkos, who's had the great start to the campaign, now John Tavares as well. When you look at what the captain of the Maple Leafs has done so far, would you agree with Elliot that, listen, I don't know if he's going to be there, but that's going to be a speed bump for a lot of people who are making the decision. They have to have the conversation. Does John Tavares need to be on this team?
Yeah, I don't know how he's not on this team the way he's played. And I thought he was a decent chance before the season, but I think emphatically he's got to be on this team now. And, I've had this discussion recently with somebody else about, Barzell's on the team, and I'm thinking, yeah, I don't know how you could put Barzell ahead of Tavares on this team right now, based on the way they played this year, and it's no disgrace in not making this team, but I don't know how you keep John off, especially when you look at the intangibles of face-offs and how many key face-offs he takes and where he ranks in that department. There's just a lot of reasons why he probably should be, and I think, and Elliot thinks, will be on the team.
You have a thought on Jack Campbell I mean, the one thing that we keep, you know, keep saying after we keep seeing great performance after great performance is the price tag keeps going up for Jack Campbell in Toronto. Every glove save he makes, they chant soup. Every pad save, every blocker save, they chant soup at Scotiabank. Do you have a thought on the new legit number one in town, Jack Campbell?
He's legit, and you know, I know he's going to. He's got to be above $5 million a year. And all I can think is the most direct way of handling Jack Campbell's contract negotiations is he gets the money he's making this year, and he gets Peter Mrazek's money, and somehow the Leafs are going to have to get rid of that contract. And if they do that, then I think they can sign Jack Campbell, and they can make everything fit. And then you've got to hope that what they've seen out of Joseph Woll is the real thing, or what they believe is the potential of Eric Schallgren is with Woll in tandem could be a backup, or if there's another answer as a veteran backup that's in a more manageable price tag. But you know, now you look back and you think if they'd. It got my attention when they paid Peter Mrazek 3.8 before they went to Jack Campbell and said, we want to pay you 4 or 4.5. You know, it always seemed like you couldn't be paying the backup more than twice as much as the guy that you're hoping could be the starter. And that has that's become a bit of an issue. But I think they can get through this, but it would help if they could get Peter Mrazek up and running and make him a viable guy for somebody else.
Let me conclude on this one, CeCe. The we talked a lot about the Matthews and Marner centuries, had a conversation about John Tavares, throw William Nylander into the mix as well. Of the bottom six forwards, who's the most interesting player to you? You know, whether it's Kampf or whether it's Richie, Spezza, Simmons, etc., Engvall. Who raises your eyebrow the most?
Well, that's a great question, and there's a few, but I'd say Kasha, just because I think he's the kind of guy that can move all over the lineup, and I really think when he's on that third line with Kampf, it's exactly what you want out of your third line. By the way, I don't know how they number it in Minnesota, but I think that is the prototypical best third line in the league now with Eriksson Ek and Marcus Foligno and Jordan Greenway. I think the Leafs are going to find out it's pretty uncomfortable playing that line tomorrow. But I'd say Kasha because I think he's solidified the bottom six and he's given you, you know, potentially 20 goals again if he can stay healthy. And I know he's been out for a few games now, but it doesn't sound hopefully as serious as the stuff he's been through before.
You know, that's that Eriksson Ek line that you referenced as well. That's got two Selke Trophy candidates on him. One who will get the votes, and the other is kind of sneaky in Marcus Foligno, who no one's really talking about because I think people can't believe he's playing this well. Same as Ryan Hartman, who, you know, has been lighting it up for the Minnesota Wild as well. But you're right. That is an awful line to play against. It's going to be a good game. Like, it's Saturday night. It's a big stage. Two hot teams. I'm very much, I think we all are, looking forward to this one. Chris, thanks so much for sharing thoughts on Brian Williams and your thoughts on tomorrow night's matchup, the Maple Leafs and the Minnesota Wild. Much appreciated. You be well.
Good stuff. Anytime, Jeff. Enjoyed it. And looking forward to tomorrow. Should be really good.
It should be. Chris Cuthbert, play-by-play voice for Hockey Night in Canada and the NHL on Sportsnet. It is the Maple Leafs and the Minnesota Wild tomorrow. If you haven't had a chance yet to watch Minnesota, do yourself the favor. It's a good team. Also, I want to mention Montreal Canadiens without Jeff Petrie tomorrow, upper body injury, without Josh Anderson as well. He's out 2-4 with the upper body injury as well. It is the Montreal Canadiens facing off against the Nashville Predators. That will be John Bartlett and Greg Millen handling that one. Man, Bart's done tons of Habs games in his career. It's awesome. Colorado Avalanche facing off against the Ottawa Senators. Harnarayan Singh, Gary Galley, and Sean McKenzie working ringside of that one. Pittsburgh, Vancouver, John Shorthouse, John Garrett, and Scott Oak will be handling the affairs there. And just heard from Chris Cuthbert. It'll be the Toronto Maple Leafs facing off against the Minnesota Wild. Chris Cuthbert, Craig Simpson, and Kyle Bukauskas handling that one. A couple of minutes left here in the program. Matt Marchese, what stood out to you? What's the newsworthy stuff from the day?
Well, we all actually have less than a minute, but I'll go with that, or just about a minute. This is the producer in me, Jeff. I thought the conversation with Scotty about Jeff Gorton and what they're looking for in their next general manager, I think, is important because, you know, I think we might see more of it. And you guys talked about it with Mike Ford on the 32 Thoughts podcast. Teams are going to look outside the box for their next hires because the sport desperately needs new voices. That's at least the way I look at it.
Bad news from Maple Leaf camp, a collision between Mitch Marner and Jake Muzzin. Mitch Marner leaving the ice. They're going to reevaluate him in the morning, according to Sheldon Keefe. That adds a wrinkle into tomorrow's matchup. Thanks, Martin Marchese. And I want to thank all of our guests today, Elliot Friedman, Chris Cuthbert, Scott Laughlin. You just heard from Matt Marchese as well. And thanks to Danielle Furtado for playing the keyboards behind me here. Have a great weekend. Back Monday.